This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
The road to redemption has brought the Warriors back home. The Golden State Warriors are the 2017 NBA champions.
Here's your host, 6'1" former Oklahoma Sooner basketball player, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back to hour number two at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Before we get underway here in hour two, you know what? We've got to recognize one of our premier sponsors, and that is Innospec Oilfield Services, where chemistry matters. Seasoned chemical service veterans, longtime industry innovators, custom chemical solutions and services, and they are no stranger to every major Texas energy play. Unequaled personal service. Check them out online at InnospecINC.com. Well, in hour one, boy, we were talking about the SEC, a little bit of the Big 12 Conference. Right now, we're going to head over to the Big 10 Conference. Urban Meyer and his Ohio State Buckeyes, they will face Wisconsin Saturday night for the championship. So let's head to Columbus and preview the big game and get the skinny on the players. My go-to guy is Bill Rabinowitz, the beat writer for the Columbus Dispatch. And he is, if you did not know, he is a best-selling author of The Chase and Buckeye Rebirth. Hello, my friend. Good to have you back, Bill.
Nice to be with you, Alyssa. I'm not sure I'm best-selling, maybe good-selling.
Hey, you got to set the bar high, right, Bill?
Well, thank you.
Okay, so let's take time to preview Saturday's Big Ten matchup against Wisconsin. It is an 8 o'clock kickoff on Saturday night in Indianapolis. The game will be televised on Fox. So just, you know, from the start, what are your expectations, and what do they got to do to come away with a win?
Well, it's such an intriguing game. You have Ohio State, which has as much talent as anyone in the country, but at different times does not look like it, obviously against Wisconsin or against Oklahoma and against Iowa especially. Yeah. They just kind of lay an egg. So you wonder, okay, just how good are they? They've beaten Penn State. They crushed Michigan State. They came back to beat their arch rival Michigan last week. So obviously, you know, they're a good team. And then you have Wisconsin, which is undefeated but hasn't really played anybody. Probably the best team they've played is Michigan. And so you just don't know, you know, how good Wisconsin is and which Ohio State team is going to show up. So that's what makes it intriguing. And then you factor in the playoff implications, and it really kind of takes on a different dimension.
Getting you ready for the Big Ten Championship, Wisconsin and Ohio State, with Bill Rabinowitz, the beat writer with the Columbus Dispatch. We've got to step aside for a quick commercial break, and we will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
We are back right here in hour number two at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And let's rejoin Bill Rabinowitz, the beat writer with the Columbus Dispatch, as we continue to preview the Big Ten Championship with the Ohio State Buckeyes and the Wisconsin Badgers. And one of the intriguing storylines is what in 2014 the Buckeyes and the Badgers faced each other. And Ohio State beat Wisconsin 59-0. I mean, it was just total domination. So that was an exciting Big Ten championship.
That was stunning. I don't think anyone expected that, certainly not Ohio State. Sometimes things just, you get on a roll, and Ohio State was on the other side of it against Iowa this year. That was a stunner. And Ohio State needed something like that to get in the playoffs that year. I don't think they need something quite as lopsided, but style points do matter, because this is going to be a very interesting debate if Ohio State wins on Saturday.
Okay, so let's talk about Ohio State. As you said, you know, there's been some twists and turns in this season, some highs and lows. Where is your confidence level right now with the Buckeyes?
Well, I think that they have mostly gotten their act together. The offensive line is certainly better than it was earlier in the year. Defensive line has been dominant all year. They've changed up their linebackers a little bit, and I think this is a better alignment for them. They've moved Chris Worley out to outside linebacker, where I think he's better. Tough Orleans come in the middle and played well. Denzel Ward has become a lockdown corner. They still give up some plays, but they're really talented. I mean, especially that front four. I mean, they've got about 10 guys that can play at a really, really high level. So the talent is there. It's just a matter of will they make the plays. And last week they missed tackles, which really has not been a problem most of the year, but they missed on one punt return. They missed about six tackles, I think. It was kind of bizarre. But you know, they've been a pretty good tackling team, and they're very talented. And then you look at offense, and the big question I'm sure you're going to ask me, Alyssa, is about JT Barrett.
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's talk about JT Barrett. I mean, is he going to start in that Big Ten championship? Give us the latest, the skinny on him.
Yeah, Urban Meyer said that he has been cleared. He will play. He did not say, but we reported in the dispatch, my colleague Tim May, that JT had arthroscopic knee surgery on Sunday, the day after the Michigan game.
My.
Obviously, it was a very minor thing. That whole camera gate, that was crazy. So I don't think it was a serious injury. I think it was just kind of a nip and tuck kind of thing. I mean, I don't know the details, obviously. But they are confident that JT Barrett's going to play.
Well, can you kind of give us a recap of what happened with the photographer as he bumped into JT Barrett before the Michigan game? Because Urban Meyer, he was hot.
Oh, he was furious.
Yeah.
He was furious. And we came into the press conference after the game.
He was angry.
He was delighted. Oh, yeah. We thought he'd be ecstatic because they beat their rivals with a backup quarterback. And all we could do was think about that incident on the sideline. What happened was JT Barrett was just throwing on the side before Ohio State's first possession right after the opening kickoff. And a photographer or somebody with a camera apparently bumped into him. Whether it was intentional or not, I don't know. You may have seen the TMZ video where it doesn't show the actual contact, but it shows a fan's reaction to it. You can see JT hobbling. He continued to play, and then when in the third quarter, when he went down, what happened, I think, was the swelling. That's what JT said. The swelling from the original injury became. Actually, this has been a long-term injury. He hurt it against Indiana in the opener, but he'd been able to basically pop it back into place whenever he needed to. But because of the swelling from the camera contact, he couldn't do that on Saturday when he got hurt in the third quarter. So that's the reason that he couldn't keep playing. Very strange story.
Yeah, and so did they go ahead and do an all-out investigation? Because that is what Urban Meyer had demanded. I mean, he was, as I said, I mean, he was hot. He was very, very angry and...
Yeah, he was. I mean, I think that they are definitely looking into it, but there's only so much they can do. Certainly Urban Meyer's not. He's got a team to coach. So I think he's counting on anyone who might have video of the situation, of the incident, to come forward. It's a strange deal. From the fans' reaction, it almost seemed like it was intentional, but I don't want to assign motives, obviously. It was just a strange thing.
Do you agree with Coach Meyer as far as, you know, there's just too many folks on the sideline? I mean, we're media folks. We're trying to do our job and share the story with the fans, with the world. But should there be some pullback on that?
I think there should be. And Michigan's one of those stadiums where it's really tight on the sidelines. Iowa's another one. Some places there's a decent amount of space, and others there isn't. And Michigan's one of those ones where the fans are pretty much right on top of the players. And I do think that there needs to be some kind of security there so that doesn't happen. I mean, could have been a lot worse than that. I mean, somebody could have, you know, done the Tonya Harding thing on a player.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I do think that it should be controlled. Now, maybe not in the end zones where the players aren't standing, but from the, let's say, the 20 to the 20 or whatever the players, whatever team kind of has their area, yeah, it should be protected.
Okay, we're getting ready for the Big Ten Championship Saturday night, Ohio State and Wisconsin. We are visiting with a beat writer from the Columbus Dispatch. He covers the Buckeyes. That is Bill Rabinowitz, who is back with us. SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Connect with us. That's right now, live on Twitter, at @eRadioSports. So tell me this, Bill. I mean, here, you know, the regular season has wrapped up. Just where did the Buckeyes improve the most? Because you're saying you feel good about where they are at this point, and it seems like they've worked things out.
I think the offensive line is probably the most improved area on the team. Billy Price moved from guard to center, as Pat Offline did last year, and has played very well. Jamarco Jones is very solid at left tackle. Michael Jordan was an All-Big Ten pick yesterday. And Isaiah Prince, who really was in some ways a disaster last year at times, was 13 All-Big Ten. So that's a really impressive. That's pretty impressive to have four guys recognized. And the other spot is now held down by Demetrius Knox, a Texas kid, who came in to replace Brandon Bowen, who got hurt in midseason, and has played very well. So I think the offensive line has been crucial. That's kind of the foundation of Ohio State's team, like it is most teams. And that's probably been the area that's improved the most. The wide receivers are much, much more productive this year than they were last year as well.
You know, when you talk about the Buckeyes, one of the headlines this week has been talking about the assistant coach in Greg Schiano, the whole saga with Tennessee. They were very close to hiring him
right, and
backed out. I mean, what was your reaction to that? And I'll say one thing about Urban Meyer. I mean, he stood by his man.
He did, and so did Gene Smith, who made himself available to a few people in the media, including me, even though he's down in Texas for the college football playoff selection committee meeting. Because Gene Smith and Urban Meyer, they were, you know, I think offended in a way that Greg Schiano's kind of reputation was besmirched in a way they thought was unfair. It's such a very tenuous, third-hand kind of link to the Dembski thing, and Gene Smith believes that really was a smokescreen. That was just an excuse for people to vent against a hire that they didn't think was kind of sexy enough.
Okay.
And so to kind of what they painted on that rock in Tennessee, I'm sure that they were really offended by that. It was Greg Schiano. Gene Smith told me he sat him down after that unsealed document was released and said, give it to me, you know, tell me the whole truth. That he came away convinced, that he talked to other people, that Greg Schiano knew nothing about what happened at Penn State. He was completely innocent. It was just a one-hand, kind of an offhand comment in a deposition by Mike McQuarrie. And people are using that, unproven, not even investigated because it was not given any credibility, and it denies a guy a job. I think they're really offended by that.
We're in the Big Ten Conference, but just from the outside looking in, are you surprised how Tennessee has had so many problems with, trying to land the right guy?
Yeah. I mean, Tennessee, you know, is a very solid program. It's traditionally been a very good program, but I wouldn't say it's a top 10 program nationally. I mean, I could probably name 10 schools fairly easily that have a better history and probably consider a more desirable job, but it's probably a top 20 job. But they're so upset about what's happened to their program, going winless to the SEC, I believe. And I think they want a home run hire. I think they really wanted John Gruden, from what little I read about it, and that's not happening. And so it's really a strange situation. You know, guy after guy now is turning him down. Not a good look for the Volunteers.
Right. Hey, Bill Rabinowitz with us. Just a few more minutes. SB Nation, SB Nation Radio. He is with the Columbus Dispatch. So let's move ahead. Let's talk about the game on Saturday. How intense will it be against Wisconsin?
It'll be very intense. First of all, Wisconsin, you know, they did play last year, so it's not the first time they've played since 2014, but it is the first time in that setting. And even though it's basically a new cast of characters, they know. They've been reminded about it this week. Wisconsin is going to be very, very intense. And they know if they win, they're in the playoffs. Ohio State knows that if they win, they have a chance for the playoffs. And if they win convincingly, every time they make it more convincing, that helps their chances. Style points will certainly matter with Ohio State this weekend. So, and it just has this contrast in styles. Wisconsin is going to just pound you, pound you, pound you. Ohio State will do that too, but they also have the big play potential. On defense, Ohio State's probably got more stars. Wisconsin has played very, very well together. They haven't played an elite offense. You just don't know whether their statistical rankings, which are exceptional, are due more to the fact that they're really good or the competition they've played.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they're a good defense. I mean, there's no question that they're a very good defense. But they have not been tested the way Ohio State's going to test them.
Hey, it's a great way to kick off hour number two as we preview the Big Ten Championship, Wisconsin and the Ohio State Buckeyes on Fox at 8 o'clock on Saturday night. We have been visiting with Bill Rabinowitz, the beat writer with the Columbus Dispatch. Check him out online. And, Bill, always a true pleasure. Enjoy the game. We'll have you back, and we'll talk about that top four, the college football playoffs, and also hopefully the Heisman as well. Okay, thank you, Bill.
I appreciate it, Alyssa.
You bet. Stick around. The next generation of sports. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, we are back. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Thank you so much for joining us on this Friday night. Of course, our next segment being powered by our friends at Innospec Oilfield Services, where chemistry matters. Seasoned chemical service veterans, longtime industry innovators, custom chemical solutions and services. They are no stranger to every major Texas energy play. Unequaled personal service, and you got to check them out online at InnospecINC.com. Well, I am so excited for our next segment because we are going inside the ropes with former PGA pro. He is a lifetime member of the PGA of America. He has produced 4 books. He is a best-selling author. That is the outstanding Larry Miller. Good evening, Larry.
Good evening, Alyssa. Hi. Good evening to you and all the golfers out there.
Well, I tell you what, all the golfers are energized because Tiger Woods is back, and it has been truly such an exciting week. It's been 10 months since we've seen him play competitively. Should we be tapping the brakes a bit and not getting too excited? But he has shown us some really good things, you know, on Thursday.
Well, golf needs him so badly right now. It would be a real shot in the arm for the game. And he's back. He's back playing. And I'll tell you, from what I've seen, now, you know, we have to kind of temper this a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What I've seen so far is his golf swing looks really good to me. You know, I was a little bit concerned with his injuries and surgeries about how he would be able to swing the golf club in anywhere close to where he used to. But what I've seen so far is his swing looks really good. That big dip that he had for a while on the downswing seems to be minimized and not as pronounced. I think the plane of his swing looks like it's right on plane. It looks really good. Now, as far as tempering that optimism, I'm going to say, you know, this is a – they're playing an easy golf course by tour standards.
Okay.
It's a short field of about, 18, 19 players, whatever
mm-hmm.
it is. And, you know, this is not a full field, tough golf course pressure-filled golf tournament. The real story is going to be told when the heat is on, when it's a full field, when it's a hard golf course, and the pressure is ratcheted up. Because as we said before in one of our earlier segments, you know, what happens is that when the heat gets turned up, the muscles get a little tighter, a little bit more constricted. The golf swing changes a little bit, and the great players are able to perform through that with that pressure. And the big test is going to be what happens when Tiger, after this, you know, ventures into a regular tournament. But having said that, it's very optimistic right now because of the way he's swinging the golf club. To me, that's what I was looking at. I wasn't looking at his scores or anything. I was looking at the way he swung the club because that tells me going forward how effective he's going to be playing. But it looks really good to me right now. I think he's on plane. His tempo looks good. He's as I said, he minimized that big dip that he had. I'm kind of surprised that he's swinging so well, really, with all the injuries and surgeries. But anyway, I sure hope it continues because golf needs it really badly.
We are Inside the Ropes with Larry Miller, who joins us each and every week at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And all I can think of, you know, as far as the Hero World Championship, what a great starting point for him to return so that he can kind of, ease back into it.
Well, that's right. You don't want to come back, in a U.S. Open or anything like that. It could
sure.
be traumatic. Because it could be very detrimental and counterproductive to what he's trying to do. So I think it's he's smart in, of course, in doing it this way and coming back to an easier golf course with this is almost like an exhibition, you know, or a social gathering.
Right.
And so he's smart to do that because he can just kind of feel his way back and maybe even play a couple of more, minimal tournaments until he's ready to take on a real test. So I think it's good, and maybe he's doing it the right way. But the encouraging thing is that his body looks like he's in great shape, and it looks like his body is allowing him to swing the club very well.
Larry Miller is with us as we are Inside the Ropes. He is a life member of the PGA of America and former PGA Tour player, the author of four books on golf and performance. His latest release is Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental, and we are all celebrating. We are talking about the return of Tiger Woods. And, you know, just to kind of follow up what you were saying, Larry, we were talking about the mental aspect of the sport. Golf, they say, is 80% mental and 20% physical. So with that being said, right, we can count on, I'm not a betting gal, but I could place a bet on Tiger Woods then, huh?
Yeah, he's proven. He's got a proven track record in that department, and he's a great thinker on the golf course and tremendous will to win. And as I said, he's this time away maybe has been refreshing for him, and it's a new start. And so you know, as long as the body continues to hold out and he's swinging the way he looks like he's swinging, I think we could see him being a force again in the game.
Okay, well, let's move ahead. Let's talk about the mental aspect of the game and how you talk yourself into a great performance, your golf state of mind. What is your self-talk? So when you prepare for a round of golf, a competitive round, what is your mindset going into that round?
It's all about positive visualization and positive expectations. You know, as I said before in one of my books, you know, there's a huge difference between hope and expectation. You know, the lesser players hope to hit a good shot. The great players expect to hit a good shot. And that's the difference. And so you need to, you know, an effective visualization is very, very strong and important. People that are good at visualizing and visualizing positive outcomes perform a lot better than those that have difficulty doing that. And so Tiger has always been, Jack Nicklaus was the epitome of that. Jack Nicklaus said he would not swing the club until he had a clear vision in his mind of a successful outcome of the shot, where he could actually see the shot in his mind as if he's watching it on television. And Tiger's got that same ability. And so it's a big, big deal. You know, as I said, players who struggle, they're sitting there hoping to hit a good shot, you know, and wondering, and maybe, you know, I want to avoid the lake, or I want to avoid the out-of-bounds stakes or the hazard. The great players don't even consider those things. They're just looking at a positive location to place the ball into, and they can see it happen in their mind's eye. And so that's the way you do it. It's all about being able to stay positive and actually visualize positive outcomes.
You know, and I think back, you and I, we had talked about this, one of your experiences on the PGA Tour. You know, golf doesn't always come easy. Sometimes you have your bad rounds, your difficult rounds. And would you mind sharing with the listeners tonight, back in the 70s when you played at TPC Sawgrass on a very chilly, a very cold day? God bless you. I know this is a painful story, Larry.
Well, I had won the Gulf State Section Championship, PGA Championship, in 79. And there are 34 PGA sections in the country. And so they have a tournament of champions where all the section champions go to Sawgrass and play a championship. Well, I went there. It was in the high 30s, the temperature. It was windy, right on the ocean. It was unbelievably difficult. And I shot 89 that day. And the last time I had shot 90 had been when I was about 11 or 12 years old. So, needless to say, you know, I was traumatized, and I had to actually make a great par in 18 to shoot 89 and not shoot 90. So after the round, I'm at the scoreboard looking at the scores, and I overhear some guy who, I don't know, he was a member at the club or something, and he's looking at the scoreboard, and he tells his friend, he says, "Look at this." He said, "Some pro shot 89 today." Can you believe that?
Oh, my God.
Can you believe a pro shot 89? I overheard that.
Devastating.
And I went. It was about 1:30 in the afternoon. I had some lunch, and I went to the practice range, and I stayed there till the sun went down. And I did not leave that range until my swing was automatic. I went out the next day. I shot 68, and I ended up finishing third individually out of the 34 players because nobody shot lower than 73 the second day. So what drove me was two things. It was, I guess, the embarrassment of what happened. And also, my pride was hurt that I shot what I shot, and you know was so I was determined. I was determined that I was not going to leave that range until my swing felt like it was on automatic pilot.
And you know,
and
you
so yeah, got a lesson in determination and perseverance.
Well, and you had talked about that a couple of weeks ago. Just going into those deep practices means, you know, practicing long, uninterrupted intervals, and it allows you to, you know, reach the depths of your swing and what you're trying to accomplish. Hey, listen, we are flat out of time. Larry, could talk so much more to you, and we will continue this conversation next week. So thank you so much for dropping by, and enjoy the coverage this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be fun watching Tiger, and let's hope that it continues in the game. The game is going to be better for it.
Absolutely. Hey, Larry Miller has been with us. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are running short on time. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, we are back at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, hour number two. And we are so glad you made it a point to join us on this Friday night. Thank you so much. You can join us each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 Eastern Time. And as promised, we're going to talk some NFL. It's time for our NFL news and notes. But we have got to pause and recognize one of our sponsors, and that is Innospec Oilfield Services, where chemistry matters. Seasoned chemical service veterans and longtime industry innovators. Check them out online at InnospecINC.com. Okay, so we have got a lot of ground to cover, and right now we're going to shine the spotlight on the New York Giants, who made a stunning decision to bench two-time Super Bowl champion and what two-time MVP in their quarterback in Eli Manning. And that's why we are calling on my guy, Christian Dyer, who covers the Giants and the Jets for the Metro New York newspaper. Does an outstanding job. Good evening. Thank you so much for joining us, Christian.
Yeah, surprising is one way to put it. I probably would have used another S word, and that's stupid. But did not see this one coming at the beginning of the year or even the beginning of the week that the Giants would bench Eli.
Yeah, it's very disappointing. And so I guess I have to ask you, you're there in New York. I mean, Christian, what was your immediate reaction when you heard the news?
Well, it was a little bit of disbelief that the Giants would do it at this juncture and not only bench Eli Manning. I'm sure we'll go into depth in a moment, but who they benched him for and Geno Smith. This isn't a promising player that they need to kick the tires on. That would be Davis Webb, the third-round pick, who the Giants have said is going to be seeing some extended snaps. He hasn't played at all this year, but they will be giving him a rollout. But then it's going to be Geno Smith on Sunday in Oakland. Yeah, that was the head scratcher behind all of this. And also cutting short Eli Manning's consecutive streak, right? 210 starts, started every game since week 11 of the 2004 season when he was a rookie. Really is kind of puzzling to see that the Giants are going to go in this direction, not only cutting short the streak, but who they're cutting the streak short for.
You know, and I have to just think, you know, what the emotions are for Eli Manning, what he is going through. Can you even imagine how humiliating that this must be? There had to be other options that I just don't even like. And I'm not a negative person, but I don't like how they have handled this at all. My heart breaks for Eli.
It is. And, you know, we've spent so many conversations, and I've been on your show now for a few years,
yeah,
where it seems like we're always talking about the Jets being the team that shoots themselves in the foot. Like, you know, some Rex Ryan press conferences were like watching a mouse fall down a flight of stairs. It was just, you know,
right,
one thing after another, and they couldn't get out of their own way. And now suddenly, I wrote it this past week, it's the Jets who are the ones who are kind of rising above it. And I think Eli Manning, in a very similar way, is taking the high road. He was given the option to start the first half so he could keep his streak alive, and then Geno Smith would come in the second half. And I think in a very shrewd way, he kind of called the Giants bluff on this and said, no, I think it's better for everybody involved if I just start the game with, you know, the clipboard in my hand. And I don't think the Giants were prepared for that answer necessarily, or for Eli Manning to go that direction. And now he's left them really looking bad. And I think that, you know, when you're kind of looking long term at all of this, does this impact Eli Manning's future with the Giants in 2018 and moving on?
Hey, with the Metro New York newspaper, Christian Dyer back with us, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Don't want to get too far into our interview. Connect with us live on Twitter at E Radio Sports. You can go back and listen to the entirety of this interview at podcastarena.com. We have awesome show hosts here at SB Nation. Check out all different programs. So help us, you know, help us pinpoint, Christian, why have the Giants struggled so mightily this season? I mean, and also take us back to, you know, the start of the season. I mean, what were your expectations?
Well, a lot of people thought that this Giants team had the chance to return to the playoffs, something that they haven't done in back-to-back years for quite a long time. But there was always the Achilles heel. And when we spoke in August, you asked me the question, the Giants will make the playoffs if, and the Giants won't make the playoffs. And I said, the Giants won't make the playoffs if their offensive line performs as poorly as it did last year and the year before, because they spent the whole offseason addressing all these other issues except for the offensive line. Lo and behold, the offensive line goes out there and plays and protects Eli Manning just like the worst unit in the NFL, just like you would expect from them. So
it's really come down to protection. Manning's release time in the pocket is one of the fastest. I believe it's second or third fastest in the NFL this year. I don't care who your wide receivers are. You can't systematically march down the field if once you don't have the option to go deep. And right now, Eli Manning, and it won't be Eli Manning this week, it will be Geno Smith, but Eli Manning hasn't had the time in the pocket for his receivers to get downfield, go fully through their routes, and be in a position where he can place the ball for them for, you know, the deep gains that you need to open up the running game. And just kind of everything else really has faltered because this offensive line hasn't been upgraded now for 3 years.
Okay, so what do you think is, you know, what do you think is going through Eli's mind? I mean, in the future, and if he should decide what to move on from the Giants, what would be potentially the best fit for him?
I think right now he might be thinking, how is he going to look in orange? Because a great destination for Eli Manning could be the Denver Broncos. I mean, talk about a story that could
wouldn't that
itself.
Be cool?
Eli Manning
wow.
following in the footsteps yeah. of his brother, who in many ways was disrespected in Indianapolis. Now Eli being disrespected, perhaps stepping into a situation where, you know, this is a Denver Broncos team that is not far away from being a contender, might just be a quarterback piece like Eli Manning away. And don't you think John Elway, sitting there, president of the Denver Broncos and in charge of player personnel, licking his lips and thinking about the possibilities of Manning under contract for 2018, but then they're able to, you know, work out a deal and be able to essentially buy out the rest of his contract for $6 million in 2019, what the possibilities might be for the Broncos, who are going to have a good amount of cap space, too. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think Denver's a strong possibility. Also wouldn't surprise me as a stopgap for a year or two, a team that spent a lot of money this offseason the previous year, the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, the connection's going to be there with Tom Coughlin, who's now in charge of football operations in Jacksonville. Can't help but think, though, that a team that has some good pieces, good wide receiver, good offensive line, but has struggled to find consistency at quarterback, if Eli Manning is perhaps a stopgap for 2 or 3 years, and then the Jaguars perhaps draft his replacement and let him kind of be mentored for a couple years under Manning. I could see Manning either in Jacksonville or Denver in 2018, but I'm not writing off the possibility that he doesn't return back to being the week one starter next year. Here in New York, there's going to be a general manager change. I'm guessing that there's also going to be a head coaching change. I think that's a pretty strong bet, Alyssa. So, yeah, those are probably going to be the three spots where we're going to see Eli next year. But I think there's a strong chance he is here in New York with a new head coach, perhaps giving him a new lease on life.
Sports writer with the Metro New York newspaper, Christian Dyer, back with us, SB Nation Radio. The Big E Sports Show, you mentioned a couple of teams. You're talking about the Broncos. My boys, my sons, they are big-time Arizona Cardinal fans, and they said, wouldn't it be awesome if Eli would land there?
That would be a great place. And Eli's had a little bit of success in that stadium as well in the Super Bowl. So got to keep that one in mind, too. There's going to be a comfort level with him, you know, with a team like that. He would fit into the offense. He's got the release. And I know a lot of people are knocking Eli Manning this year. The passing yards are down. The sack numbers up. The sack yardage is way up if you rate it out for the rest of the year. But considering the offensive line he's played behind, considering the fact that in two-thirds of the year he's been without Odell Beckham and Brandon Marshall, and the running game is one of the worst in the NFL, the fact that his completion percentage this year, 62.5%, actually higher than his career average, so that number's up. His 2-to-1 touchdown-to-interception ratio, Alyssa, that number's also better than his career average. So going beyond some of the numbers, there are some positives there that make you say Eli Manning's got a couple years left.
Yeah, and, you know, I was talking about the Cardinals. Bruce Arians, he is the quarterback whisperer, right?
Yeah, listen, it would be an absolutely great fit in Arizona. I think.
Hey, you got to dream big. Come on, have some fun here tonight.
the weather would be a tremendous
fit. Oh, yeah.
They have the wide receiver targets, and I think maybe one offensive lineman away from being able to really be able to entice Eli Manning. And, you know, listen, this is an Arizona team that is built for now. This is a team that has kind of gone through the rebuild the past couple of years, soared a couple of years ago, looked really good, and has taken a step back, the past year or so. So Eli Manning might be that one piece that comes in, fits in as a veteran, and just takes that team to that next level. That That wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Okay, the Giants, this quarterback mess, you're talking about Geno Smith and him starting. Do you think, I mean, there's been some talk about, are they already tanking for next year's draft? I mean, when we talk about what is the future for the Giants?
Well, I think you could probably make the argument they were tanking around week three or week four.
Yeah,
the way the Giants
I know.
Have been this year. I mean,
yikes.
2-2-9, second worst record in the NFL, losing to a winless San Francisco 49ers team a year ago. This is not a good team, and I think it's a team that's checked out in many ways. And I've covered the NFL since 2008. I've never been around an organization, either Giants or Jets, where you've had multiple players suspended in the same year, like you've had with the Jets here. Janoris Jenkins most recently being the player suspended. You have players openly kind of taking shots at management over the Eli Manning decision. So I think there's a lot of things going on here that even if the Giants aren't in tank mode at this point, it certainly looks and feels like the locker room has checked out.
Okay, sports writer with the Metro New York newspaper, always amazing, Christian Dyer with us, SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio. And I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. Yeah, we're talking NFL. We have hit on the Giants quarterback situation. Let's transition here. Usually, you know, when we have you on the program, Christian, we talk about the New York Jets. So give us the pulse on them. They face the Chiefs on Sunday. Here we are, week 13, with a 1 o'clock kickoff on CBS.
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting game. The Jets come into this weekend 1-5 in their last six games. Keep in mind, however, this is a team at 4-7. People thought the Jets would be lucky to win two games this year. So the fact that they're sitting on four wins, have a couple winnable games to close out the year, this could be a team that might be in that 5-6 win category, and I think have a little bit of momentum going into this offseason. They're going to have a big war chest, $80-85 million to be able to spend on free agents. They're going to be able to entice some people with the young core, and in particular, Alyssa, the way that their team has played on defense, I think is very exciting and kind of follows the model of successful Jets teams in 2009-2010. Now, Kansas City's a team that's also coming in, you know, kind of faltering in their own right, but this could be a very, very interesting game here for the Jets.
Our NFL news and notes continues with Christian Dyer from the Metro New York newspaper after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back to SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. Join us live on Twitter at E Radio Sports. Right now, we're going to rejoin Christian Dyer talking Giants and the Jets. He is with the Metro New York newspaper. You know, we were talking about just a moment ago how the Giants, the benching of Eli Manning, but would the Jets ever, are they in any position to consider benching Josh McCown?
Yeah, Todd Bowles, head coach, said this week that Josh McCown's going to be his man for this week. He thought that Josh McCown's playing a little bit better. And keep in mind, Todd Bowles, unlike Ben McAdoo, who I think has probably resigned to his fate, Todd Bowles is very much coaching for his job. If this team can end up surprising some people and kind of being in that 5-6 win sort of range, I think there's a very, very good chance that Bowles returns for a fourth season here with the Jets. He's a strong disciplinarian. He's got a strong vision. He's unflappable. He's not going to change his mind just because the media or fan base tells him to do so. And right now in Josh McCown, he sees a quarterback who maybe isn't perfect, but is going to be better than Bryce Petty, a quarterback who, you know, I think the world of Bryce Petty, but he's probably not ready at this point and maybe reaching his ceiling in the NFL as a backup quarterback. And Christian Hackenberg, their draft pick last year in the second round, who just really hasn't developed. And, you know, you're talking about the Jets perhaps wanting to tank the season for a high draft pick. You also got to keep in mind, they have a young core on offense. They have to develop with Robbie Anderson, Austin Seferian Jenkins, and some of the other pieces that have kind of come in over the past year or so. Maybe unheralded players, but still very much in need of development. A young quarterback isn't going to help their progress at all, but a veteran like McCown gives them the best chance to be able to further develop them for 2018.
What are you hearing from the fans? I mean, what do Jet fans want them to do in terms of a long-term solution with the quarterback situation?
Well, you know, Jets fans went into the season embracing the tank, and then they sat there at 3-2 a few weeks ago thinking, well, maybe we have a shot to make a run at a wild card spot.
Right.
You know, and now all of a sudden they're kind of saying, okay, we are who we are. And keep in mind, the Jets this year, seven losses, six of those seven losses by 9 points or less. So there's a lot of optimism here. And when you throw $80, $85 million projected in cap space next year, they're going to be able to make a run at some free agents. And I think Kirk Cousins is going to be at the top of that list. Supposedly this week it came out that Cousins wasn't going to sign a long-term deal with Washington, even if he was offered the highest salary in NFL history. He wanted to see what direction the organization was going. Well, a Jets team that was very popularly picked to go 0-16, rattling off four wins so far this year, with the defense that they have and some young talent and enough money to make a splash, I think that the Jets are going to make a serious run at a Cousins or a quarterback like that. I don't think they're going to draft their future quarterback in the first round this year, but maybe they get their future running back in a Saquon Barkley or somebody like that to team up with Cousins. So I think Jets fans are excited. There's a direction. There's a sense of purpose. And finally, it's the team across town, the Giants, that are the circus and not the Jets.
Wrapping up our time, Metro New York newspaper Christian Dyer has been with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, giving us the skinny on the Giants and the Jets. And you enjoy that game on Sunday against the Chiefs. As I understand, the Chiefs are a very physical team, so it's going to be cool to watch it all play out.
It's going to be interesting. And Andy Reid right now has had some struggles this year, and
right.
Alex Smith is on the hot seat. So it's going to be a feisty game.
Thank you, Christian, for joining us.
Thanks so much. Happy Friday.
Yes, you too. And that was Christian Dyer with the Metro New York newspaper. A very special thank you to all of our amazing guests tonight right here at SB Nation Radio. As a reminder, don't drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show at SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio.